Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Pantograph today from Monday, March 23rd, 2026. From the front page, Coles County gearing up for racing season. Dragway hosts chassis certification cleanup day. By Rob Stroud, Charleston. The start of the 2026 racing season at the Coles County Dragway is still about a week away. But there was already a lot of activity there on Saturday. Several volunteers took part in the annual cleanup day at the dragway to help new owner Mike Irwin of Mattoon get ready for races starting on March 28th. In addition, this facility hosted the first of two straight days of chassis certifications and extended technical inspections for National Hot Rod Association racers. One of the volunteers, racer Kevin Hunt of Decatur, said this cleanup day is a long-time tradition among drivers and fans who help with brush clearing and other tasks. "I try to get down here every spring to do this. We try to support the track here every way we can," Hunt said. The Decatur racer noted that he creates videos about the Coles County Dragway for his YouTube page, including one with the new owner. "He's a local guy, a car guy, and he's been around here a while," Hunt said of Irwin. "I think it'll work out just fine." Also from the front page, cops, six hurt in shooting. Police say two ISU students among victims. By D. Jack Alkery, Normal. Six people, including two juveniles and four adults, are being treated in local hospitals for gunshot wounds after a shooting was reported in the early hours of Sunday. According to a news release from the Normal Police Department, officers responded about 2:40 a.m. Sunday to a report of multiple shots fired in the 700 block of Franklin Avenue near Illinois State University. Officers found multiple victims outside who had gunshot wounds and began rendering first aid. Two juvenile males, two adult men, and two adult women were transported to local hospitals with apparent non-life-threatening injuries, according to the release. As of 10:40 a.m. Sunday, Normal Police Department could not provide an update on their conditions, said Sergeant Josh Wilson. On Sunday, the Illinois State University Police Department said two of the victims were ISU students. The 700 block of Franklin Avenue is home to several apartment complexes and rental homes near ISU's campus, and the road stops to the north at railroad tracks. Police have not made any arrests in this incident, which remains under investigation. Wilson said no further information was available about any recovered firearms or the potential number of firearms used. According to a preliminary investigation, the department said this appeared to be an isolated incident. Wilson said he did not believe there was an ongoing threat to the public. Normal Police and Illinois State Police Crime Scene Services is collecting and processing evidence, according to the release. Officers from ISU, Bloomington, and the McLean County Sheriff's Office also responded to the scene to assist. Anyone with information is encouraged to contact Detective Kyle McComber at 309-433-3415 or KMCCOMBER at normalil.gov. Anonymous tips can be submitted online at normalil.gov/1773/submit-an-anonymous-tip. Via the Normal PD mobile app or by sending a text message to 847-411 with the phrase, all in caps, Normal PD, followed by a space and the tip information. Turning to page 2, today's flick fact. Question. The Fairbury restaurant scene once had a McDonald's before there was a McDonald's as we know it today. Do you know the name of the man who opened McDonald's in Fairbury in 1956? Answer. Amazing but true. The Fairbury man who opened McDonald's before America knew of any other McDonald's was, not kidding, Ronald McDonald. The clown mascot Ronald McDonald wasn't introduced by the National McDonald's until 1963. How time flies. 100 years ago, March 23, 1926. How wonderful 2 days of spring-like change, the wrong, long winter event. It has been a severe winter in almost unbroken strain in a program of first one and then another of the winter features, including many snows and the worst kind of March weather. 75 years ago, March 23, 1951, the city limits of Bloomington pushed across the Highway 66 Beltline for the first time when Brantville was annexed to the city, March 22nd. City councilmen voted to annex the 4-acre area at the southwest corner of the intersection of Highway 66 and 150. 50 years ago, March 23, 1976, Bloomington Normal City Councils may as well have met in joint session. The topic was virtually the same on both sides of Division Street in separate meetings, basement flooding. After talking about such problems for years, both councils have decided it's time for action. 25 years ago, March 23, 2001, a mostly vacant downtown Bloomington bank building at 115 East Washington Street will become the site of a city-county complex under a proposal in which the Bloomington and McLean County governments will split a $3.5 million purchase. Called the Bloomington Federal Building by some, the Champion Federal Building by others, the structure spans from Front Street to Washington Street along East Street. It is 4 stories high and contains about 120,000 square feet of space. The initiative, announced Thursday, takes city-county cooperation to a new level. From page 4, Life. Breakfast fuels ag awareness. Community members praised by chamber at annual events. By Olivia Jacobs, Bloomington. The McLean County Chamber of Commerce celebrated local leaders, educators, farmers, and students this week at the annual Agricultural Awareness Breakfast. The event was held Wednesday, March 18th at the Interstate Center in Bloomington in partnership with the Agribusiness Council and sponsored by Growmark, Inc. Brad Drake, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Growmark, gave the keynote address, Lessons from a Still Learning Leader. Kristen Myers of Tri-Valley High School was awarded the John Maitland Agriculture Awareness Grant, which focuses on projects that will enhance student understanding of agriculture, according to a news release from the Chamber. Her project focuses on the expansion of hands-on learning through the school's greenhouse, which provides K-12 students the opportunity to explore plant science, greenhouse management, and horticulture. High school students will also mentor younger students and help prepare them for the annual plant sale, build leadership, and develop real-world skills. 3 others were awarded the George H. Holder Agricultural Awareness Grant, which honors Holder, who was a lifelong McLean County farmer, known for his passion for innovation in agriculture. The fund supports projects that promote agriculture awareness and hands-on learning experiences for students, according to the news release. This year's recipients are Jamie Corcoran of Washington Elementary, supporting a hydroponics project that introduces students to indoor gardening, sustainability, nutrition, and entrepreneurship through growing and selling produce and seedlings. Andy Son of Hudson Elementary School, leading the development of a pollinator garden that teaches students about environmental stewardship, food systems, and the critical role of pollinators in agriculture. Meg Bauer of Olympia Middle School, engaging students in creating container-based pollinator gardens and peer-led education stations that promote awareness, leadership, and community involvement across multiple grade levels. The breakfast also highlighted artwork from students at Corpus Christi Catholic School, Hudson Elementary, and Leroy Schools, who participated in the Chamber's placemat design contest with the theme, Together We Grow. The artwork features agricultural-inspired designs, ranging from landscapes to plants and animals. Additionally, the Chamber recognized outstanding FFA Service Award winners. Jaden Ormsby, Normal FFA. Maddie Latimer, Leroy FFA. Leah McKee, Normal West FFA. Tyler Holtz, Blue Ridge FFA. Max Mason, Ridgeview FFA. Grace Keisner, El Paso Gridley FFA. Maylee Benjamin, Tri-Valley FFA. Micah Wiltz, Lexington FFA. Cashton Morger, Hayworth FFA. And Cameron Rader, Olympia FFA. The Chamber is now accepting nominations for their 2026 Agriculture Awards, which will be accepted through September 28th. Visit mclenco.chamber.org for more information. Also on page 4, Far Before My Time by Tim Hornseth. 1956. Okay, a little before my time. It just depends on perspective, doesn't it? When one is growing up in the 70s and early 80s, the mid-50s seems a long time ago. I mean, it was before I was around. In reality, it was only 20 plus or minus years in time. To really put it in context, that is almost exactly how long it is from the turn of the century until today. And we all remember that very well, don't we? Y2K and all that. I have shirts in my closet older than this. Well, what is so special about 1956? Nothing really, except I have dug up some pamphlets and maps from the local Chamber of Commerce and McLean County School directories from that time period. And I'm a sucker for history and historical statistics, especially when I can relate to the place. Plus the fact that 1956 makes it exactly 70 years ago. And I also am a sucker for nice, even, or round numbers. Pursuing these little gold mines of information, I learned a lot of things, some of which I will share, so we can delight in the amazement. I also learned that with just a few pieces of old papers, I can waste an hours of my life reading about long-ago facts that have little or no relevance to my life today. Did I say waste? No, not waste, just historical research, some of which is kind of interesting. For instance, I read that in Illinois, you had a primary election. Here in Minnesota, I believe the primary won't occur until sometime in August. Did you know that in 1956, Bloomington had a population of 40,211, and 46% of the population were registered voters, while Normal had a population of 11,528, with 39% of the population registered to vote? I can only guess this difference being the number of college students in Normal due to Illinois State University students being considered residents but not registering to vote in Normal. Looking at the 1956 map of Bloomington-Normal, a few things stand out, mostly the fact that Vernon Avenue ends in a vast blank white spot just a couple blocks east of Linden. The map helpfully indicates that the airport is 3 miles way outside of town to the east of Bloomington, and the Beltline, Veterans Parkway, was not even a twinkle in the eye of the Public Works Department. Combining information from the map and the school directory information, we learned that Colleen Hoos was not a school, but still an actual high school teacher in English and speech. There were a total of 7 banks in the two cities, 5 in Bloomington and 2 in Normal. While the metro area had 3 hospitals containing 488 beds plus 60 bassinets. For leisure, there were 5 motion picture theaters, 1 being a drive-in, 2 golf courses, and 4 parks totaling 108 acres. Finally, there were 747 retail outlets. I guess even back then, shopping was a leisure activity for some people. The one thing I found that has not changed at all, Bloomington Normal is exactly 781 feet above sea level. I guess I should say, I assume it hasn't changed, because it turns out that it was announced just a few years ago that Mount Everest, aka the tallest mountain in the world, has grown about 5 additional feet. In reality, it was just remeasured with more accuracy. Tim Hornseth spent his formative years here in Normal, attending elementary through high school in Unit 5 schools. His wife is a native of Normal and an Illinois State University graduate. They reside in the 3rd largest city in Minnesota, coincidentally living less than a mile away from a fellow Normal Community High School graduate from the same year. Want more Tim? Go to conversationswithtimothy.wordpress.com to see past columns and see what he thinks about the world. From page 1 of Section B, the sports section for Monday, March 23rd, college basketball, Illinois. Illinois puts on a show. Illini men win 76-55 over VCU to advance to the Sweet 16. By Colleen Kane. Greenville, South Carolina. Andre Stokovich dribbled behind his back to get a step on Terrence Hill Jr. in the first half Saturday night and then took off. When he completed the slam over VCU forward Lazar Djokovic, he hung ever so slightly on the rim, looking back toward the Illinois bench with a satisfied look on his face. It was all part of the Illini show for the crowd at Bon Secours Wellness Arena in the 2nd round of the NCAA tournament. There was 7'2" center Slanavir Isevic taking a feed from Kylan Boswell near the 3-point line and somehow flying to the rim for a monster dunk, causing his teammates on the bench to leap around in celebration. There was Stojakovic coming up with another big dunk on a Ben Humphreys assist in the 2nd half. Tomislav Isevic got in on the action with a couple of jams. The number 3 seed Illini were on their offensive game once again in Greenville and turned in a pretty big defensive performance, too, to top 11th-seeded VCU 76-55. They advanced to the Sweet 16 to play number 2 seed Houston on Thursday in Houston. Illinois will make its 2nd Sweet 16 appearance in 3 years, after making an Elite 8 run 2 years ago. The last time the Illini did that was a span of 4-year appearances in 5 years, from 2001 to 2005, including the Elite 8 in 2001 and the National Championship game in 2005. Stojakovic led Illinois with 21 points, including 16 in the first half to help the Illini gain a 7-point halftime cushion. Tomislav Isevic had 14 points and 11 rebounds, and Keaton Wagler added 14 points and 5 rebounds in a show of the Illini's depth. Illinois led by as many as 12 in the first half, but VCU's aggressive defense forced the Illini into 8 first-half turnovers, including on 2 straight possessions during a 10-0 Rams run. Terrell Ward's rebound and basket tied the game at 23, with 5:02 to play in the half. The Illini got into early foul trouble, including 2 apiece in the first half by Tomislav Ivovic and David Merkovic, who had started the game strongly on the offensive end. They both sat out the final 4 minutes of the half, but Illinois pulled back into the lead thanks to Stojakovic. He scored 11 straight points for Illinois, including the big dunk and a pull-up jumper with 34 seconds to play in the half, for a 35-28 halftime lead. The Illini came out strong in the second half, with back-to-back 3-pointers from Wagler and Merkovic and Tomislav Ivisic alley-oop dunk on the feed from Merkovic to go up by 13. VCU had come back from a 19-point second-half deficit to upset North Carolina in the first round on Thursday, but Illinois kept its foot on the gas to pull out the victory. VCU lost starting guard Nick Lewis to what appeared to be a right ankle injury in the first minute of the game. Next opponent, Houston, the 2025 national runner-up, beat Texas A&M 88-57 in the second round, behind 18 points and 4 rebounds from senior guard Emmanuel Sharp. Houston will be playing in its 7th straight Sweet 16, not counting the canceled 2020 postseason. In addition, the women's basketball team also won their first round game, and they will be advancing to the second round today, Monday, March 23rd, versus number 2 seed Vanderbilt. The Illini are the 7th seed. That game will be shown tonight, Monday, March 23rd, at 6 p.m. on ESPN2. Turning to national and world news, the Digest. Cuba begins to restore power after grid failure. Havana. Cuba began restoring its energy system Sunday, a day after a nationwide collapse of the entire grid left millions of people in the dark for the 3rd time this month. About 72,000 customers in the capital, among them 5 hospitals, had energy again early Sunday, according to a report from the state-run Electric Union and the Ministry of Energy and Mines, but it's only a fraction of Havana's total population, of 2 million. In Havana and provinces such as Western Matanzas and Eastern Holguin, local power microsystems were set up to supply the most vital centers. Cuba's aging grid drastically eroded in recent years, but the government also blamed the outages on a U.S. energy blockade after President Donald Trump in January warned of tariffs on any country that sells or provides oil to Cuba. California sheriff seizes thousands of ballots. Riverside, California. A California sheriff running for governor has seized more than 500,000 ballots cast in a November special election from county election officials, saying he's investigating a ballot count discrepancy. County election officials have disputed the claims by Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco, a Republican. California Attorney General Rob Bonta, a Democrat, calls Bianco's move unprecedented and says it is designed to sow distrust in elections. Bianco is one of 2 prominent Republicans running for governor in a crowded June primary that includes more than 6 Democrats. California runs a top-2 primary system that puts all candidates on the same ballot, regardless of party, and sends the two candidates who get the most voters onto the November general election. Ukraine. Russia attempted to intensify offensive efforts over the past week, taking advantage of the more favorable weather conditions, though that resulted in an increase in the number of casualties. Floor collapse. 6 people were taken to area hospitals with non-life-threatening injuries after a floor collapsed at a wedding venue in Tamworth, New Hampshire, around 4:30 p.m. on Saturday. A spokesperson for the New Hampshire State Fire Marshal's office said. Alcohol. Crowds of Syrians rallied Sunday to protest authorities' efforts to limit the sale and consumption of alcohol in Damascus, reflecting high anxiety in the cosmopolitan capital that Syria's new Islamist government could threaten long-held secular freedoms. Agents at airports worry some, with a photo of people waiting in a TSA line Sunday at Kennedy International Airport. Very, very long lines shown in this. Trump's DHS nominee goes ahead after weekend Senate vote, by Lisa Mascaro, Associated Press, Washington. President Donald Trump's decision to order federal immigration agents, or ICE, to U.S. airports to help with security during a budget impasse is drawing concerns that their presence could escalate tensions among air travelers frustrated over hour-long waits and screeners angry about missed paychecks. Trump made clear on Sunday he will go ahead with the plan to have immigration enforcement officers assist the TSA by guarding exit lines or checking passenger IDs, unless the Democrats agreed to fund the Department of Homeland Security. Democrats demand major changes with federal immigration operations and show no signs of backing down. Hundreds of thousands of Homeland Security workers, including from the TSA, U.S. Secret Service, and Coast Guard, have worked without pay since Congress failed to renew DHS funding last month. Bad idea, said Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican Alaska, about the new airport security plan, which Trump said would start Monday. What we need to do is we need to get the DHS issues resolved. We need to get the TSA agents paid, she told reporters at the Capitol, where the Senate held a rare weekend session. Senators advanced the nomination of Senator Mark Wade Mullen, Republican Oklahoma, to be Trump's next Homeland Security Secretary by a party-line vote 54-37. With 2 Democrats joining most Republicans. A vote on the confirmation could come as early as Monday. Monday, Mullen tried to make a case that he would be a steady hand after the tumultuous tenure of Kristi Noem, Trump's first DHS secretary. Everett Kelly, president of the American Federation of Government Employees, which represents more than 50,000 TSA employees, condemned Trump's plan, saying in a statement that ICE agents are not trained or certified in aviation security. Our members at TSA have been showing up every day without a paycheck because they believe in the mission of keeping the flying public safe, Kelly said Sunday. They deserve to be paid, not replaced by untrained, armed agents who have shown how dangerous they can be. Democrats said they are willing to fund TSA and most other parts of DHS as they press for immigration operation changes after federal agents killed 2 U.S. citizens in Minneapolis during an immigration enforcement operation. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Monday, March 23rd, 2026. Please stay tuned.